This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. When Colin Kaepernick first decided to stage a protest during the national anthem, he did so not by taking a knee, but by sitting on the bench behind his team. The year was 2016, and this was a preseason game between Kaepernick's San Francisco 49ers and the Green Bay Packers. Turns out the gesture might have been completely overlooked, save for a reporter who knew the quarterback and asked him after the game why he had done it. Author Dave Zirin writes about all this in a new book, The Kaepernick Effect, that examines how Kaepernick's protest has echoed across the country and how athletes at the high school, college, and professional levels followed him with sometimes dramatic results. Dave Zirin is a sports editor of The Nation and a columnist for The Progressive. He's also the author of A People's History of Sports in the United States, among other books. Dave, welcome to the show. Nice to have you.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
What was happening in the country in 2016, Dave, when Colin Kaepernick first decided not to stand during the national anthem?
Well, by that point, the Black Lives Matter movement had been going on for about 4 years. I mean, if a lot of people signal it as starting with the killing of Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman in 2012 in Sanford, Florida. And in the summer of 2016, you had two very high profile killings of people by police, both killings caught on camera, both videos of the killings went viral. And the people killed were named Alton Sterling and Philando Castile, one in Louisiana, one in Minnesota. Couldn't imagine two more different states, but the results were the same. So it gave off the impression of policing violence, racialized police violence, as a national problem. And there was a lot of anger. There was a lot of frustration. There were a lot of marches. And that ricocheted into the world of sports, as it often can do. And Colin Kaepernick was expressing, on a very personal level, his just general disgust with the gap between what this country promises and the lived reality of Black and brown people. So in August, he sat during the anthem.
I was struck by a note in your book that he wasn't the first athlete that year to protest police violence against African Americans.
No, not at all. It starts over that summer with a very dramatic stories of several WNBA teams. Now, of course, the big difference between the WNBA and the NFL is the fact that the NFL is the closest thing to a national religion that we have in this country, or a national language that we have in this country. And the quarterback is the most high profile position. So Colin Kaepernick taking that knee during the anthem, it had a resonance that was beyond any other possible sport in any other possible moment. But it really does need to be noted that WNBA players, particularly after the killing of Philando Castile, because that was in the hometown of the team called the Lynx of the WNBA in Minnesota, they made the decision that they were going to wear black t-shirts and hold hands during the national anthem. And they also made the decision, and I thought this was a very creative form of sort of athlete protest that I'd never heard of an athlete doing before. They made the decision that they were not going to speak to the media unless it was about racial justice and police issues.
Wow.
And so it made every press conference an effort to try to raise consciousness about what was happening and why people were so upset. And then the NBA and the WNBA, but it's really the NBA, started fining the WNBA players for their attitudes towards the press, for wearing the black shirts during the anthem. And yet they didn't buckle. They said, well, we're still going to do it and we'll just have to pay the fines. And then NBA player Carmelo Anthony stepped forward and said, well, I'll pay the fines. And that's a big deal because WNBA players do not make the coin that NBA players.
Right.
So the fines were, they bit. And Carmelo Anthony stepped in to pay them. Now, all of this took place before Colin Kaepernick took that knee in August of 2016. Wow.
I mentioned this during the opening, but how close did Kaepernick's decision to sit on the bench during that during the national anthem, during that preseason game, come to actually being overlooked, Dave?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's that old expression, I think, from Shakespeare, some are born great and some have greatness thrust upon them. This was thrust upon Colin Kaepernick. instance of him sitting on the bench could have been something that nobody noticed and was and never commented upon, and maybe it could have even been a one-week thing. The only difference between it sort of just drifting away in the memory hole and it becoming this national and international lightning rod was because of a reporter named Steve Weish, who I interview for the book.
Right.
Now, Steve Weish is a reporter's reporter. He's terrific at what he does. And he's somebody who had known Colin. Colin was 29 years old when he took the knee. He'd known Colin since college. And he had been following his social media assiduously over that summer. And he noticed that Colin Kaepernick had been posting articles about the police killings that had taken place, about his frustration. And he was even posting some deeper articles about what does it actually mean when people say things like, we need to dismantle racism, we need to dismantle police brutality. What does that actually mean? Well, Colin was putting out some pretty sophisticated articles trying to explain that. Steve Weish sees all this, and he sees Colin sitting. And unlike the dozens of reporters that are present at that game, because this is the NFL, let's remember, Steve does a beeline for Colin Kaepernick and says, okay, something's up with why you were sitting on the bench behind your teammates. Let's talk about it. And that's when Colin Kaepernick, you know, who is extremely, I've spoken with Colin several times, extremely smart, extremely soft-spoken. He just went off about police violence, about qualified immunity, which protects police officers from prosecution. And after he said those words, after he said things like there are bodies in the streets and police are getting away with murder, I mean, it caused a firestorm. I mean, it was something that was picked up by Donald Trump, who was running for president. So right. It was really this perfect storm. You know, August 2016, you have this incredibly divisive presidential election taking place. Right. And Trump seeing this as an opportunity to speak to the grievances of his own supporters.
Right.
And to use a black quarterback as a kind of punching bag for his own ambitions, to the delight of audiences.
Dave, describe the reaction to Kaepernick's decision to sit during that 2016 preseason game. This is the first time he decided to protest. How did it play across the country?
Well, it played in a fashion that one might expect, in that people who were very frustrated by police violence immediately rallied to his side, and people who were believed that athletes, particularly black athletes, should just shut up and play, were outraged. And it was made worse by the fact that what Colin Kaepernick was doing was reframed by some politicians who did not have any interest at heart in actually listening to the message of what he was trying to say. And instead, they put forward that Colin Kaepernick was kneeling against the troops and he was kneeling against the country. And it was a slap in the face to patriotism and mom and apple pie and all of this stuff, and really trying to demonize him. So what Colin Kaepernick did in response to that, it really, I think, taken aback by how angry people were just because he said he was against police brutality and was protesting peacefully. Colin Kaepernick spoke to a former Green Beret and former NFL player named Nate Boyer. And Nate Boyer and Colin came up with this idea where they said, okay, how about instead of sitting behind your teammates, you take a knee in front of your teammates, and that will show respect for the solemnity of the situation, of the ritual, while at the same time registering your dissent. Now, of course, once he took that knee, the firestorm that existed before turned into an absolute inflamed monsoon. Colin Kaepernick was now walking through hell in a gasoline suit.
Wow.
Because when he took that knee, it became immediately iconic, immediately on the cover of Time magazine. And that only built his support and also made the people who wanted to tear him down that much more committed to doing so. And I think what they all recognized was the power of that gesture. And that, to me, is what Colin Kaepernick's great gift has been to this political period that we're in, is that he offered up a language and a method of protest that others could replicate.
You know, I'm still struck that his protest wound up getting so much attention when the protest of those WNBA players on the court turned out to be largely overlooked. I gather that's the power of the NFL, right?
It's definitely the cultural and media power of the National Football League. It's definitely, we could also speak about the dismissiveness that a lot of the sports media has towards the WNBA. I would put that in there as well. But it also, I think, is about the fact that the WNBA realized very quickly and very, I'm talking about management, executives, franchise owners, that they were agile in realizing very quickly that this protest wasn't something that was going to go away, that the players were willing to pay the fines, that Carmelo Anthony was willing to pay the fines for the players. And so they quickly rescinded the idea of fining the players and let them have their say. Colin Kaepernick, on the other hand, immediately met resistance from the NFL establishment, from NFL franchise owners, from the people at the top of the National Football League, who tend to be very, very, very right-wing politically. And that's just where they give their money. You gave millions of dollars to the Trump campaign. So imagine you're a billionaire owner of the Dallas Cowboys, and you are writing seven-figure checks to the Trump reelection campaign. And then you see this player taking a knee, not a knee against Donald Trump, but not a knee for Hillary Clinton. It was a knee against police violence. But what upset them so much was not even so much the issue that Kaepernick was raising. It was that the NFL is a very, unlike the WNBA, is a very top-down, very authoritarian league where you are supposed to do what you are told. And that can have a strong effect on players, as well as the fact that the average career in the NFL is only 3 years and the contracts are not guaranteed. So that's a lot of pressure to just shut up and play and toe the line. And yet once Colin Kaepernick took that knee, it immediately threw open a whole bunch of questions that had nothing to do with police brutality. It had to do with the racial makeup of the National Football League. Yeah. It had to do with the fact that you have, you know, 70% black players and no black owners. Like, these questions started to get thrown up by the mere fact that, you know, Colin Kaepernick was taking a knee and speaking about racism. It just made a lot of players and a lot of people sympathetic, asking, well, where's the NFL in this struggle against the racism? Right. Not only are they indifferent, they're actually on the wrong side.
Dave, I'm also struck by the fact that Colin Kaepernick wasn't exactly the most likely candidate to become the leading protester of police violence against African Americans. In fact, you describe him as an introvert who took no steps to publicize his decision to sit on the bench during the national anthem. He just did it. Tell us a little bit about Colin Kaepernick here.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, I've spoken with him several times. I feel like I have a good read on the person he is. I mean, very, very intelligent, very, very soft-spoken. The sort of person who in the locker room when he was a quarterback was more comfortable speaking with the backup lineman than he was sort of palling around with the head coach as if he was somebody special. Right. And if you know something about the NFL, you know that's not the usual locker room dynamic when it comes to quarterbacks. They tend to exist in a world apart from the rest of the team, with exceptions, of course. And Colin Kaepernick was one of those exceptions. So that's the sort of person he was. He was the sort of person who, say he had a sponsor who sent him a bunch of free swag, he'd be walking around the locker room giving it away to people as opposed to just hoarding it in his house. I mean, that's just who he was. And that was before his politicization. That was just part of his character. And it makes sense to me that when he saw these video, viral videos of police violence, that his response would be a human response.
Right. Dave, how quickly did other athletes begin to emulate Colin Kaepernick's taking a knee?
Oh, immediately. Absolutely immediately. Because I think what Colin Kaepernick gave, and I think I said this earlier, but what he bequeathed was a method by which if you're frustrated, if you're angry and you're an athlete, here's something you can do right away. And immediately the taking of that knee, it became iconic. It came, everybody in a stadium or in the bleachers would know exactly what it was you were upset about and why you were doing what you're doing just by seeing that knee hit the ground during the national anthem. And so if you have an athlete like someone I interview in my book named Rodney Axon Jr.,
that's
high
my next question, right?
Yeah.
He was the first athlete to take a knee anywhere in the country following Kaepernick's decision to take the knee.
Yes, and it was just days after Kaepernick. It was basically his next game. Rodney's next game. And it was because he, Rodney himself, was very frustrated, not just by racism in society, but by things he had dealt with on his football team at his suburban high school. And so for him, when he saw Colin Kaepernick take a knee, it was just immediately clicked with him that this was something he could do to show people that he was upset. What he could not foresee, of course, was the fallout.
What Rodney Axon was attending Brunswick High School in Ohio, as you point out, Dave, he decides to take a knee after overhearing his own teammates using the N-word to describe players on an opposing team in an upcoming game. So that's what fueled his protest, right?
Absolutely. But he was also fueled by what was happening in the broader society. I mean, Rodney, like almost everybody I interviewed, referenced Trayvon Martin, who we mentioned earlier, was killed in 2012 by George Zimmerman. I mean, if you're Rodney Axon, Trayvon Martin is killed when you're 13 years old. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of the folks I talked to, they were 10, 11 years old in 2012 when Trayvon Martin was killed. So for them, that was, if you're that young, you're old enough to understand what had happened to Trayvon Martin, but you're also young enough to wonder why you have to live in a world where such things could happen. And
Rodney didn't tell anybody on his team what he was going to do. What was the reaction there in Ohio when Rodney Axon took the knee?
A lot of racism, a lot of backlash, a lot of death threats. He actually thought like a lot of people in the book who I spoke with, he actually thought that he was going to initiate a discussion that could even be constructive. That could be the sort of thing where, okay, it's like I go to a school that's a predominantly white institution. Like what is it that I can do to raise awareness that hearing things like racial slurs or, getting some empathy if there's a police shooting? I mean, can we have these kinds of discussions, please? And what he found instead was a backlash. And he also was, to his surprise, and this was another thing that a lot of the folks I dealt with had to deal with, that a lot of the folks I interviewed had to deal with, is the phenomenon of social media. Mm-hmm. Meant that if some, total reactionary in Switzerland sees what you're doing, they're going to send you some sort of violent death threat or something like that. I mean, just globally, these stories mushroomed, and most of them were one day stories, but sometimes that's all it takes for somebody who wishes to at least scare you to bite their teeth into it.
Yeah.
And Rodney found himself walking his elementary school age sister to school because he was worried about harm that could befall her. And that's a common thread in the book as well, but I'll stop right there.
Well, another common thread in the book is this idea that Rodney Axon responded by the outrage that he had sparked by taking a deep dive himself into the history of activism by Black athletes. I mean, sometimes I think those of us who are a little older assume that everyone knows a lot of this history, but obviously that isn't the case. What did Rodney pick up from what he read?
Well, Rodney picked up that he was part of a tradition by doing this. And, we don't live in a society that teaches history, let alone sports history, let alone political sports history. So you have to go looking for that kind of knowledge. And as Rodney learned about people like Muhammad Ali, people like Tommy Smith and John Carlos, who raised their fists at the 1968 Olympics, this was the sort of thing that made him realize, like, okay, I'm not just inventing the wheel here. By being this political football player, I'm not weird. I'm not an oddball. Because, high school, that's a lot of pressure to conform, mm-hmm. no matter what is happening in the broader society. So, it empowered him to be like, all right, this isn't just about, doing something because Colin Kaepernick's doing it. This is about a tradition that I'm proud to walk in, and I'm standing on the shoulders of giants.
Well, as Rodney Axon looks back on what he did, Dave, what does he think? I mean, does he stand by his decision to protest in the way he did and spark the kind of outrage that he wound up sparking?
Absolutely. Rodney stands by what he did, but it even went to another level in that summer of 2020 when you have the largest demonstrations in the history of the United States. And I called back all the people that I'd interviewed and I asked them the very basic question, which is, do you feel vindicated at all? Now, I got a lot of different answers to that question. Some people said, well, I'll never feel vindicated as long as there's police brutality in the world, you know. But Rodney was one of the people who, you know, just unequivocally said, yes, I do feel vindicated because I was so alone in what I was doing here. And now we have these protests, masses of people in the streets, you know, not just on the coasts or anything like that, not just blue states or anything right. like that, but right there in his backyard. And, you know, that made him feel like he was on the right side of history.
Dave, I want to turn to another young person. This is Alyssa Parker, who's from Des Moines, but was going to school at the time in Northwest Iowa at Buena Vista University. This is in Storm Lake. It's a very conservative part of the state. Alyssa was a cheerleader, and some of her fellow cheerleaders and a few football players decided to protest during homecoming. Were they concerned about the same issues that Colin Kaepernick was?
Yeah, the same issues animated them, of course, also animated by local issues as well. That's the case that in all of these stories, you have this coming together of the local, the national, and even the international of feeling. I mean, and that's, I think, a function of our social media right. age. I also think it's a function of the consciousness of the people involved.
You know, Alyssa said that when they staged this protest, it was dead silent in the stadium. What was the reaction like after the game, Dave?
Not good. I mean, she felt pushed out of the school at that point and had to finish her education somewhere else. The level of backlash, the level of vitriol, mistrust that she felt inside the classroom, really feeling like she was marked. But no regrets. That's the thing that's so interesting in talking to all these folks is that there's such a clear-eyed sense of they were on a mission and they were right to do what they did.
I thought it was interesting. The school's new president asked to visit with the group of protesters after that initial protest at Buena Vista University. And initially, he was very open to talking to the group. But that sort of seemed to change. What happened?
Well, you start hearing from alums and you start hearing from the people who fund the departments. And, you know, a lot of these school presidents, they're managers more than anything else. So at first he was trying to manage and handle these angry students by making them feel affirmed and listened to. But then he has to manage the people who are actually paying his salary at the end of the day. And that proved for this university president to have more weight than the concerns of the students themselves, which is a darn shame because you think that the educational mission is what should be tantamount right. and paramount in all of these cases.
I thought it was interesting the layers of pressure that Alyssa faced in the wake of her protest there. She at first she resigned from the cheerleading squad, and then she worried at one point about her grades because even some of her professors were opposing her protests. For a student, that can be pretty intimidating.
Absolutely. And she wasn't it's interesting, the role of teachers in the book, because she wasn't the only person in the book who felt like her actual grades could be at risk because of a political protest she took on on the athletic field. But there are also other cases in the book where the teacher is the only person, particularly at the high school level, where the teacher is the only person giving the protesting athlete a pat on the back and saying, hey, you were right to do that. Or, hey, do you want to read something about someone like Muhammad Ali so you could learn about the tradition? Like, teachers play a really interesting role at that high school level, especially when coaches and teammates turn their backs.
At one point, a racial slur was written on the outside of her dorm door. Tell me what happened there.
I mean, you just said it. I mean, this slur gets written, and it was just yet another moment that made Alyssa feel like that this school could not be a place that she could be safe and kept safe, you know? And so the push for, and that's such a common thread in the book is this, the fact that these young people, they take a knee and they're doing this peaceful protest. And instead of the response being like, oh, let's listen to what you have to say, or even, oh, well, I disagree, but let's disagree without being disagreeable. I mean, that the response is animated by the threat of violence, which seeing a racial slur written on your door certainly would qualify for.
Was there a point for Colin Kaepernick, Dave, when he went from being a pariah to sort of morphing into this symbol of of a martyr standing for justice, if you will.
Yes, and it happened throughout that 2016 season first, as he became a target for Donald Trump during the election, and as Colin Kaepernick stayed true to taking that knee week in, week out for 4 months, and had a very good season statistically. So, that sort of inoculated him from being told that he was a distraction to the team or anything like that. But then after 2017, he doesn't get signed. And I remember doing a ton of sports radio at that time, and people always asking me, "Do you think he's going to get signed?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Oh, that's ridiculous. That's a conspiracy theory. You think everything is about racism. Of course he's going to get signed because he can help a team win." But I stayed with that no, even though it hurt me to do so, because I want Colin to be able to fulfill his dreams. I want him to do what he wants to do with his life, especially if he's able to do it. And he certainly was more than able to do it. And I didn't want the chilling effect that would come with seeing somebody basically eliminated from employment because of the political speech that they put forward. I didn't like the chilling effect that that would bring. But the NFL, in its shameless manner, pushed ahead with that. And then as he started to not get signed year in, year out, he became less of a ghost story by which franchise owners could haunt young generations of players, and more of kind of like this animating spirit of somebody, who inspired others.
I just want to point out that you end this book with an interview with John Carlos, who famously raised a black power fist back at the 68 Olympics in Mexico City. He advised protesters to remember that we are not the negative force in society. We are the positive force. That's a pretty positive message. I want to thank Dave Zirin, author of the new book, The Kaepernick Effect, for taking some time today. Dave, you were just terrific. Thanks so much for your time. Much appreciated.
Oh, thank you so much.